Welcome to SCI Asia's podcast on environment and policy in Asia. In this podcast series, we invite experts to discuss the many critical and complex environmental challenges in Asia and how to find solutions through policy and partnerships.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Environment and Policy in Asia. I'm Charmaine from the Stockholm Environment Institute Asia Center. In this first episode of our two-part series on air quality, we are joined by Achim Hag and Annika Kraus from Air Gradient, a leader in air quality monitoring technology. We will discuss the importance of air quality monitoring, highlighting the critical role of indoor air quality, and explore Air Gradient's innovative work in schools through the SAMI initiative that ensures safer air for children. Achim and Annika, welcome to our podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
SEI and Air Gradient have worked together in the past on some of our research on air quality, not just here in Asia, but in some other centers as well. So we are quite familiar with each other's work, but maybe some of our listeners are not very familiar. So can I please ask the both of you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your role in Air Gradient?
Thank you, Charmaine. I will start. So at Air Gradient, I have the role of CEO and I take care primarily on developing partnerships like with SEI, for example, doing business development and looking at the strategic orientation of the company. My co-founder, Nick, is taking care of R&D, our data platform, the coding work, and also the manufacturing. What I am particularly interested in is to really build a business that's not purely focused on making as much money as possible, but also taking into account our social responsibility and being environmentally friendly. So what we do is we try to keep our monitors as affordable as possible so that they can be a good choice for countries in the global south. And we also donate 1% of our revenue to NGOs that care about the planet.
So my name is Annika. I did a PhD at the Center for Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Cambridge. And there I worked with air quality monitors. So I tested them, I developed them further to improve their performance, and I also applied them in research projects, for example, in China, Kenya, or the UK. And after my PhD, I stayed in contact with my colleagues, which are actually now my dear friends, and they told me that they have been starting working with Air Gradient. And I got quite curious about the approach, which was quite different from other manufacturers from Air Gradient. So the focus on sustainability and environmental impact, open data. So I got in contact with Achim. I coordinate a large global project to test and improve our monitors. I make sure that all of our research results and data are shared openly. And I also create educational materials to make our research results, but also air quality science in general, more accessible to everyone.
Thank you. What inspired the creation of Air Gradient? And you mentioned, Annika, that this is quite a unique setup and it got you interested. So the question is for the both of you, what inspired the creation of Air Gradient and what about it drives your work?
Yes, so 5 years ago, I was on a sabbatical in Northern Thailand because my last job was based in Thailand. When the so-called burning season or fifth season that the local people here know very well hit, and I experienced really firsthand how this affected the schools that my children attended. So we began as a volunteer project, actually helping our schools monitor air quality more effectively. And so, you know, that the students and the teachers just kind of could protect themselves better and knew what's going on with the air quality. And this really shapes us till today. So from the start, we put a very strong focus on like open designs and robust and long-lasting hardware. And really this desire to support people from all around the world with, you know, affordable and effective air quality solutions. Air Gradient is currently the only global air quality monitoring company that actually makes all its hardware designs available for free under a Creative Commons license. And This means actually you can go to our website and you find all the electronic schematics, the firmware, CAD files for the enclosures, for example, openly available. We also publish all our research and algorithms so that others can really benefit from that extensive research that Annika, for example, is doing. By making our hardware open source, we also empower users, for example, easily repair the monitors or upgrade them or basically tune them to their needs. And this extends the lifespan of the monitors and avoids also things like you're not locked into subscriptions or things like that. So far, we have provided thousands of monitors into more than 70 countries.
It aligns with my values, so I'm quite environmentally aware, and I like that they're impact driven and they work towards a greener future. And the other fact is, before I started working with Air Gradient, I worked a lot with chemical industries, and they are very secretive in a way. So you cannot even take a group picture in front of the company because they're afraid that some secrets are being stolen. So that was really annoying for me because it just slowed research down so much. So I'm really enjoying now working for Air Gradient because I don't need to worry about anything. Like, I can just publish everything and I won't get into trouble with it. So these two factors actually I really like.
Air quality is a hot topic these days. So whenever we look out the window in the morning, it's looking a bit gray. At least here in Bangkok, we say, oh, PM 2.5 is high today. Is that the same thing as saying air pollution is bad? Is PM 2.5 the new buzzword that people are using? How do we define air pollution?
In general, air pollution can be all kinds of substances that are harmful to the human body or also to the environment. But as you say, it's not only PM 2.5. There are actually a lot of types of air pollution. So the World Health Organization has identified five big air pollutants that are harmful to human health. So the big five are particulate matter, but also ozone, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and carbon monoxide. But it is true that particulate matter is of these five, probably the most monitored and studied pollutant. So if you read health studies or newspapers which mention the term air pollution, then very often they refer actually to particulate matter. And particulate matter are very small solid particles that fly through the air, basically. So they're so small that they are invisible to the human eye, and they're so light that they don't settle down. So that means they stay in the air for really long times, and we continuously keep breathing them.
In your opinion, why is air quality monitoring so crucial these days? And I don't know, just to put it into context, how much air pollution exposure would make it dangerous? Because we always say now that, you know, the deaths that are linked to air pollution is even higher than other medical conditions combined. So can you elaborate more on that?
So, first of all, we need to realize that air pollution is a very severe issue that affects the entire global population. So, outdoor air pollution alone causes 4.2 million premature deaths annually, according to the World Health Organization. This roughly matches the deaths from traffic accidents, dementia and Alzheimer, malaria, and suicides combined. On top of that, there is another 2.5 million deaths associated with household air pollution, so indoor and not outdoor. And therefore, it is very essential to monitor air quality because this helps us to better understand where air pollution actually comes from, so the sources, how it spreads over different environments, and how it affects our health in the end. And if we know this information in more detail, we can also design more efficient strategies to protect the population from the health risks posed by air pollution. And also, air quality monitoring is very useful to raise awareness in the population. And that again can drive political changes or also behavioral changes of individual people to protect themselves from air pollution. It is also important to realize here that air quality varies the whole time, so there are several factors that can affect it. For example, the time of the day, the wind direction, the traffic volume, rain, other emission sources in the in the environment. So it is important to continuously monitor the air pollution in one place to capture these changes. And air pollution can also change a lot across very small distances. So ideally, to fully understand the air pollution in a region, you would also need a dense network of monitors to capture these differences in different places.
There is a recent article on The Guardian last week calling for a global fund to tackle air pollution. I thought it was interesting because when it comes to air pollution, those in more developing countries tend to fare much worse than those in richer or more developed countries. And for me, this shows that there is an unequal exposure to air pollution, and some might even call it environmental injustice. So, for you as a researcher, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I think this environmental injustice has many causes, and there are also political and economical factors that play into it, which I am not an expert on. From a scientific point of view, we can say that in these affected countries, there's only little or no air quality data at all available. While in the economically strong countries, for example, in Europe or North America, the air quality is already very closely monitored. And research has found that the simple act of recording air quality data and then making it available to the public will eventually lead to an improvement of the air quality. Just to give you an example, the United States has started to place air quality monitors in their embassies, especially in regions where there are no or little air quality data available. And after some time, the PM concentration substantially reduced in these places where the monitors were installed. And this is probably due to the attention and the awareness that these monitors and the publication of the data has created. And this eventually lowered the health risks for millions of people. And I think also in The Guardian, it was mentioned that the health costs you save by starting such a monitoring program are actually much higher than the costs for the monitoring program itself.
I know that both of you have worked a really long time on this area. So maybe from the time that you have started to now, I'm just curious, how have air quality trends changed in the past decade? Is it becoming worse or is there some silver lining?
I have to answer this question looking at different regions in the world. So, for example, there are countries which already have established environmental regulations, such as North America, Europe, Japan, and China. And there, the overall air quality has actually improved. So, this is encouraging news. That means the environmental regulations actually do have a positive effect. But then there are also regions that have experienced strong increases of air pollution, and that's probably due to the population growth and industrialization. And these regions include, for example, the Middle East, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Southeast Asia. If you want to know about it more in detail, the University of Chicago has made a fantastic visualization for that. So if you Google the Air Quality Life Index, so AQLI, you can find a map where you can see how the air quality concentrations have changed over the past 20 years, I believe. And you can also see how this affects the life expectancies of people living in that region.
When people hear the words air pollution, they immediately think smog, fumes from cars, burning smoke from agriculture, but no one immediately thinks about air pollution at home. Like, no one thinks about indoor air pollution. And research has shown that we should also be concerned with indoor air pollution. Can you expound more on that?
Sure. Well, first, we need to realize that people spend about 90% of their time indoors, for example, at home or in their work environment. So we breathe in far more indoor air than outdoor air. And the indoor air can be just as much polluted as the outdoor air because, of course, outdoor air pollutants can penetrate inside a building and sometimes they can even accumulate there. But there are also additional indoor emission sources of air pollution. And another factor is that indoor air quality is harder to regulate for governments, for example. So in some ways, that makes it more dangerous.
Yeah, you mentioned additional sources of air pollution inside buildings. Can you give some examples?
So a large contributor to household air pollution is definitely cooking or heating indoors with polluting fuels. So, for example, burning coal, wood, kerosene, or just waste. But also gas stoves, candles, or incense burning can create harmful air pollutants that can get trapped indoors for a long time when you don't properly ventilate. Besides the five big pollutants, which are interesting mainly outdoors, there are additional indoor pollutants that deserve our attention. For once, there is CO2, which we breathe out. So the concentrations can rise really quickly indoors if we don't properly ventilate. There are also indoor allergens that might be generated from mold or from mites. And then you might have already heard of volatile organic compounds, so VOCs. And these are thousands of substances that can be much, much higher concentrated inside a building than outdoors. Some of them can be really harmful, for example, because they cause cancer, but some are also pretty harmless. For example, ethanol vapor or eucalyptus smell also are VOCs. So that can make it a little tricky to gauge the health risks of just looking at the VOC concentration inside a building. What we know, however, is that especially when you're renovating, so new building materials, your floor, paint, or new furniture, they can emit VOCs that are pretty harmful to us, and they can actually continue to emit them over several years. So especially when you have just a newly built house or freshly renovated or bought new furniture, you should keep VOCs in mind and adapt your ventilation habits to that.
You mentioned adapting habits. What are some things that we can do at home to protect ourselves from indoor air pollution?
So there's actually quite a few things you can do to keep the air quality in your house clean. One thing is you can use clean energy sources. So if you have the choice, use an electric stove and not a gas stove. And then avoid burning basically anything in your house, for example, candles or cigarettes or incense. But if you have to do it, then just ventilate at the same time. And that is really a keyword, ventilating. Also, when you're cooking or after cooking, or when you have new furniture, for example, ventilating, so just opening a window, can help a lot. And if you monitor your air quality indoors, then you get a better feeling for when you need to ventilate or open the window. However, also in some regions, sometimes opening the window doesn't help because the outdoor air is worse than indoor air. So ideally, if you combine an indoor monitor with an outdoor monitor, you would know the best times of the day where ventilation gives you the best outcome for your indoor air quality. And then sometimes air purifiers can also be a good helping thing to improve your indoor air quality. Or another fun fact is that particulate matter accumulates in carpets, so and can be resuspended continuously. So actually it increases your PM concentrations indoors. So if you think about renovating your house and you are worried about air pollution, you should perhaps consider a different floor coating than carpets.
That's a really good fun fact. I do not have carpets at my home. Maybe I
Very
will have
good.
in the future. Thank you, Annika. The next question now is for Akim. I mentioned earlier that Air Gradient has worked with SEI quite a few times. So how does Air Gradient's technology help organizations like us or even the private sector? Or at the household level, how does it help in monitoring and improving indoor air quality?
Yes, I mean, I think that's a really good question. So being able to read the real-time air pollution concentration at home at any time can have a really large impact on people's awareness of indoor air pollution. And only this already will most likely lead to behavioral changes. So the continuous monitoring allows you to firstly really understand the air inside your home. What makes it worse and what makes it also better? So it shows the different pollutants in different rooms as well. So with that understanding, you have the base for targeted improvements that become then much easier, because once you start trying to improve, you have the old data and you compare and see, okay, does this thing that I'm actually doing really have an effect on the air quality? And then there are things that can be really fixed fast. You can go to a supermarket and buy an air purifier with a HEPA filter and switch it on, and you will immediately see an improvement in PM2.5 levels, for example. So this is something you can do within hours. But then on the other hand, there are other things that might be more complicated. So if you think about off-gassing of VOCs from building materials, for example, that could actually lead to being or needing to do renovations work or retrofits. So with the monitoring, you will get a really good understanding on the healthy air. And with the awareness on the indoor air quality in your home, you can then actually bring that knowledge, for example, to your workspace, to your office, and talk with your coworkers and discuss with them, how can we actually improve the air quality in the office as well? So all in all, this really, just the monitoring technology can really help individuals and also organizations to monitor and improve the air quality.
You also mentioned a while ago that the beginnings of air gradient actually came from you and your children being exposed to air pollution in northern Thailand. Did this pave the way for your work in partnering up with schools to monitor their air quality? And can you tell us more about the SAMI initiative?
Yeah, sure. So I think really, I always say having started as a school project is still in our DNA, even it's now like 5 years ago. And really this mission to educate the next generation was really like, oh, it's really close to our heart. So I think the key thing is if you talk about schools or education and air quality, there are so many opportunities in that field and a lot of different perspectives. You can look on this from an educational point of view, but also from an air quality monitoring. So I want to mention a few things. So one thing that's really important is really understanding air quality, and inside the schools that we work with, understanding what's the air quality in classrooms and also other spaces like common areas or sport facilities or maker spaces. Another really important aspect is the improving the awareness inside the community. So I think a school is a great example of a very, very holistic community where actually not only the children, but also like parents often spend quite an amount of time and going to events and so on. So we have organized in schools, for example, workshops around air quality, a roundtable with parents. So for example, we discussed how should the air quality policy be in your school? You know, like at what level, for example, do you want to stop sports activities? Because maybe, you know, the PM2.5 goes beyond a certain level. And what's really important is to have these open discussions with the whole community. So not only the parents and the teachers, but also including students, actually, and come to a common agreement on, okay, what should the community do and create a common understanding on the awareness of the air pollution and the policies. Another aspect with schools that we're actually really passionate about is like the science and coding aspect of air quality monitors. So we have a very popular air quality monitor kit, actually. So it's not a ready-made air quality monitor, but it's a kit that's very easy to assemble. And it's very popular among students, actually, because it can be very well integrated into, you know, educational settings. So the students can, for example, learn about how different types of sensors work, but it can also embed it in some kind of, like electronics class and tell them, okay, that's how basic electronics work, or even like doing easy coding exercise and see, hey, how can I actually write 5 lines of code and get data from the CO2 sensor? This gives a lot of ownership to the students as well to really feel, okay, they can actually do something and have an impact. For the ones who are not familiar with the word SEMI, it means school's air quality monitoring for health and education. It's a very, very big project in the UK where we deliver more than 2,000 air gradient indoor air quality monitors. And this makes it actually the largest study of classroom air quality anywhere in the world. So our work with schools and the SEMI project as well goes really beyond just providing hardware, no? So we believe in creating a comprehensive ecosystem actually of awareness and education, and ultimately action is really essential. So we want to empower schools with the knowledge that we have and the tools that we developed to improve air quality, then contribute to a healthier learning environment and raise awareness of, this bigger importance of air quality for public health and well-being.
Hakim, I'm curious. This sounds like a really amazing project that you initiated. During the implementation period, did you face any challenges with this?
I can think about two key challenges in general. And one is specifically in the Global South, it's budget constraints. I think is really a key issue that's we still kind of struggling to overcome. And another thing that's often not visible from the start or a more unknown issue, but that can have a huge impact is the stakeholder engagement. There's often just no money for buying any expensive air quality monitors. It's just not there. So what we try as much as we can as a company is provide our monitor designs and the software like available or make it available for free so that actually schools can take these pieces from our website and build their own monitor and then save a lot of money. So just to make it cost effective, but also give them a trusted solution because we tested this monitor, what Annika mentioned, like in with a lot of universities and in so many different fields. We also collaborate with partners and initiators to help funding these installations in the school. So, for example, in the last 12 months, together with other donors, we funded hundreds of monitors actually for schools and thus make an impact to help them. Regarding stakeholder engagement, I think this is really a key to success. So we often see schools that maybe one person in the school wants to improve the air quality, but doesn't really have the support from the whole community. And this is often very challenging to do. So the best successes we see is really the whole community is engaged in the implementation of the air quality improvements in the school, and also like having a very effective communication with all stakeholders is really key.
In Thailand, where air pollution is considered seasonal, there is a burning season, and all of the other months, it seems that we're fine. What would be a good approach or for policymakers, or what are some of the key things that they should keep in mind if they really want to address this air pollution crisis really effectively?
Charmaine, I think that's probably the most difficult questions because we have it since decades and
Yes.
so far it hasn't been fixed. But let me give my two cents on this. So I think it's really a multi-layered issue. So you need a balanced approach that also includes regional collaboration because often the smoke goes beyond borders. It needs long-term planning. It needs obviously money, economic consideration, and awareness. So let me dive in on a few things. So a lot of the pollution is caused by, burning crop residues. And this means that there needs to be economic support for farmers. They need to get better access to technologies and methods for like sustainable farming. So this has basically financial incentives that are required, also obviously educational aspects that need to be considered here. So this shift away from this traditional burning methods, I think, is hugely important. Then what's interesting, I mentioned before just public awareness. What was really interesting to see, I was in Thailand during the COVID lockdown, and suddenly everybody was wearing masks, but not because of the air pollution, because it was also in March, April when the lockdown was, not because of air pollution, but because of COVID. So it's interesting to see how the COVID campaign to wear masks was actually much more successful than the air pollution. You also need to convince people at certain levels to wear masks. So I think it shows that actually there can be an improvement in public awareness to protect themselves. So I think this is something that can be focused on just for your personal protection. What's I think also super important is regional collaboration. So when you look at NASA has this map about the wildfires, and if you zoom into Southeast Asia, you see basically it's burning everywhere, and the smoke obviously doesn't halt. If there's a border, it just blows right across the border. Obviously, a lot is also made inside Thailand, a lot coming from outside. So everybody, I think, has a share. But it also means that to really combat this, you need to cooperate across borders and work with neighboring countries and see if they can if you can align policies with the other countries to tackle air pollution. Another thing that makes it really challenging, we talked at the beginning and we called it the fifth season. So it also implies that actually, especially for northern Thailand, the other four seasons, the air quality is actually pretty good. So what it causes is that once you get into that period, March, April, where the air quality is getting bad, everybody is starting to being very, very concerned and trying to do something. And then in May, June, when the rain starts and everything drops down to green, makes it actually really difficult to achieve meaningful change because you just don't have this constant pressure on doing something. Nevertheless, I think if you put these things that I mentioned together into a comprehensive strategy, something that's ongoing and not dependent on, like who's in power or what's the season and things like this. And hopefully, like step by step, we can come to healthier air quality levels.
You mentioned public awareness and how that's really important if we want to tackle this issue really head on. I'm very curious. Sometimes it seems that, all of the decision making is not within the ordinary person's power. What are some of the steps or some of the more simple things that we can do to just give us that agency that, you know what, I can breathe cleaner air?
So one thing Annika mentioned at the beginning is like we have a lot of areas in the world, particularly in the global south, that where there's not much monitoring data. So just by getting an air quality monitor, deploying it, and contributing the data to organizations like OpenAQ that collects it and then makes it available for research that ultimately also drives policy changes, I think is a very good action. And what we saw with the US embassy is just putting one monitor on the roof and the impact they have. Like you can really replicate this as a single person. Another thing I think what's often undervalued and where everybody can play a role because it doesn't cost any money is really raising awareness. So talk to your family, talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors and make them aware, hey, there are really significant health risks associated with air pollution. Like often people know, yes, roughly PM 2.5 is not good, but really talking about them in a little bit more detail on like how bad these health impacts are can really motivate them to do something. You can use social media, you can go to meetings, you can just spread your knowledge and share your personal stories on air quality and how you personally affected or how you personally reduced your exposure. So reducing personal emissions, I think, is another really undervalued thing. So, are you taking the car or the bike? Are you taking the bus or driving again? So, like, just choosing your transportation method in Bangkok, you can use the SkyTrain, which uses a lot of emissions, or you're sitting in an idling car in the traffic jams.
Thank you so much, Akim and Annika. We have definitely covered a lot of important things on air quality, monitoring, practical things that we can do to make a difference. Thank you so much. I have mentioned that this is part one of a two-part series. So on our next episode, we will talk about Thailand's draft Clean Air Act, which aims to regulate activities that cause air pollution, including agriculture, transport, and businesses. Thank you for listening and tune in again next time.
Thank you for having us, Charmaine.
Thank you for listening to SEI Asia's podcast on environment and policy in Asia. For more information on these topics, guests, and our work, please visit our website on www.sei.org.